This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's episode 227. It's a draft review show. The NFL draft is complete. The Cardinals made their selections, and we're here to talk about it. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site about the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. The two of us have been covering the Cardinals for a ton of years. If those of you are listening for the first time, we've grown up here. We're Cardinals fans. We're analysts, inside and outside perspective. Seth has some sources he can talk about. I've been covering the team for quite a while. And so you kind of get the best of both worlds. And we're going to talk about the NFL draft. We're going to talk about the results. We're going to talk about the Josh Rosen trade. Seth, the draft. Were there any big surprises for you? I think the number one pick was far from a surprise from really everyone, even though it was a little bit surprising. But how was draft weekend for you?
Well, it was good. I mean, Thursday night, we had our typical barbecue. Jess has spurned me now for 4 years in a row as he prefers to go be part of the media conglomerate, which I completely understand and don't mind at all.
Oh, I would love to barbecue in draft.
Yeah. So, it was good. It was interesting. I think it was fun that the media and for the most part tried really hard not to spoil the first pick. As much as the Cardinals have said otherwise, I think, and this is just my opinion, I don't even know how Jess feels, I think that they knew who they were drafting a long time ago, and they just were waiting for the confirmation of draft day to come before they, kind of confirmed it. But, because you never know. Like maybe a Godfather trade offer comes in or
heaven forbid anything happened to
Kyler Murray or Josh Rosen even. I mean, if something happens to Josh Rosen, you're kind of you either say, oh goodness, we have to draft a quarterback now, or oh goodness, we can't trade him, so we're going to have to keep him and change our plan a little bit. So, it's just one of those situations where I think it was known. I just think it was not talked about, and so that made the beginning of the draft fun for the first time in a while.
Right. Well, and it was this draft was fun for a lot of reasons. It was different in terms of covering the draft because for a long time we've been used to kind of settling in and waiting for things to happen in terms of how is the board going to play out? Oh, and then we're thinking, okay, this could be a number of different players. And this time, covering the draft, they're number one. And so there was no ease in because day one, day two, and day three, they had the first pick, which made covering it a little different. So we had to, in terms of, you guys don't care about the work part of it, but it did make our jobs slightly different. But by all fan reactions, this draft seems like, and Steve Keim drafted, it seems that he drafted well a year ago. So we understand he's not drafted well in the past. Last year looks like it will be good, at least ish. This year looks like a really good class, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, first and foremost, we're going to talk about Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen. Everything that happened, did they handle it well? Then we're going to talk about the day two picks. We're going to react to them. We're going to talk about the day three picks and react to them. After we go over the picks themselves, we're going to give our grades. Were there any reaches? Were there any steals? And lastly, we'll talk about any regrets perhaps that we might have about the draft and maybe touch on a little bit about the undrafted rookies. I don't know very much about the guys that they got, but we can touch on them towards the end of the show. So let's get started. Kyler Murray, Josh Rosen. Seth's already said a little bit about the about Kyler Murray, and there was just enough doubt. There was just enough. In terms of intrigue, the Cardinals, I felt, did just what they needed to do so that it wasn't a foregone conclusion. Most people thought it was a foregone conclusion, but there was just enough doubt that even you and I both, I had articles pre-written for all three players, for Kyler Murray, for Nick Bosa, and for Quinnen Williams, because there was just a hint of doubt, just a hint. And I didn't want to be caught not having that done. So while Kyler Murray was the favorite, and in last year, in last week's the mock draft that we did, I chose to go a different way just to, one, because I had a little bit of doubt. Maybe there was an issue with the contract terms. But, I mean, in terms of what you want for intrigue, that worked. Kyler Murray got the eyeballs. The Cardinals picked their quarterback. And it ended up being, in fact, the player that everyone thought they were going to get.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just one of those situations where I even wrote it the day of the draft. I mean, so we did our podcast on the 23rd in the morning of the draft. I wrote, I think both Jess and I are going to be wrong. I really was thinking at that point that they had gone back to Quinnen Williams. I mean, I told Jess what I had heard from my source, and that was that there was a disconnect between the decision makers, a disconnect between maybe the team that was making the decision and or the guys making the decision and the guys doing kind of the scouting and things of that nature. And that tends to happen, especially, I mean, think about it. This is a group that's fiercely loyal and has been with, or that Steve Keim has grown up with, you know, and maybe the new guy, Cliff Kingsbury, coming in saying, hey, I want this guy, or, you know, pushing for this guy or standing on the table for this guy, just kind of changed things a bit, but it gave me enough doubt. And then the article started to pop up a little bit about the contract, and that's where, and I told Jess this the whole time, behind the scenes, when I would tell Jess, when I would get information, is the one thing that was troubling to me, the one thing I couldn't wrap my head around about this entire rumor, about this entire thing, was that they never, ever, unless it was like so top secret that nobody knew, they were never really discussing trading Josh Rosen. Like, it was never a priority in that, in leading up to the draft, to have a deal in place for draft night. And that was, I think, for me, the biggest, okay, how is there nothing out there on Josh Rosen to Team X or Team Y or Team Z? I mean, there was plenty of speculation. Oh, the Chargers have offered their third in Tyrod Taylor. Oh, the Giants have offered their third round pick, but they won't offer a second round pick. Oh, now maybe the Washington Redskins are offering a second round pick. You know, all that speculation was out there, but there was nothing coming back from the Cardinals' end. And to me, that was always the hardest thing to wrap my head around. Why is this team making a deal, making a decision on a new quarterback without a decision on the prior quarterback or the current quarterback even in place? And that, I mean, you and I talked about that quite a bit, you know, in text and just when we talk between the two of us. And that was kind of the hesitation all along, right? Is like, there's nothing, you know, concrete out there on Josh Rosen's status. It's really hard to believe that they're going to go into the draft without a deal in place for Rosen, but that was, in fact, the truth the whole time. And maybe that was done in part to keep things kind of quiet.
I'm guessing that's the same thing. And here's the thing. Even after the draft started, despite what they started saying, even Keim said he never at any point, even after the draft, actively shopped him. He went, I think what he did is he circled back to teams who had contacted him, but at that he said at no point did he actively shop him. And even after day one of the draft, when he didn't get his first round pick, because it, as reports came out after the fact, is that he was firm on getting a first round pick. After he, after the first round, he came out and said, I'm comfortable with having both these guys on the roster. And then the next day came and it's felt that ultimately they get the number 62 pick and a fifth round pick next year, which, I mean, it, when you look at on paper, that that's a terrible deal because they gave up a first, a third, and a fifth last year, basically for a second this year and a fifth next year. And so let's kind of talk about the Josh Rosen part of this. So Keim says, okay, and this is the interesting thing. I don't think anyone really believed that he would get traded, but there was, again, cast enough doubt that maybe they would actually put Murray and Rosen on the roster at the same time. Maybe they could coexist. Maybe they really could. I think it would have been a stupid idea in terms of the locker room. I don't think it would have caused any real tension between the players, but it would have been bad for the fan base and it would have been bad for the players in the locker room who already have a relationship with Rosen, who with whom they've already, quote unquote, gone to war with. And then you bring in the rookie and obviously he's exciting. This guy is exciting, but Josh Rosen really ends up being sort of the loser in all of this. And I don't think there's any way. Now, the Cardinals had no, they owed him nothing in terms of how, but in terms of how they handled that situation, it was really odd. Like, they never gave him any assurances. They never really shopped him. And ultimately, I think it's a good situation for him. But I just think I mean, we've talked about it on our messages and this, they really mishandled this. Now maybe the truth is there was no good way to handle it. That maybe I've come to grips that I've almost feel like there is no good way to handle it, because you either are, if you have a deal in place, well, then everyone knows who you're picking. And what happens if something happens if they handle it the way they did it, there's really no good way to do it. There's no good way to handle it with Josh Rosen. He didn't necessarily do anything wrong. He did the best he could with the situation a year ago, and they still seem very high on Rosen. They are just incredibly high on Kyler Murray. So I don't know if they could have actually – I don't know what that they could – like, if we come up with ideas, I don't think there's anything that they could have done better to handle Rosen.
No, and I think part of it is this, and you and I have had this conversation privately. I don't know how much I've talked about it, you know, on the show or actually written about it, because I don't like talking about negatives on a player. I've changed how I kind of write and things of that nature in terms of drafting, because one, those guys usually end up on the team I cheer for. So then I have to, you know, kind of deal with it. But the other thing is, you know, there's so much talk about what players can't do, but we don't talk enough about what players can do. And I think that should be what the focus is on, especially with these guys. But all that being said, I do think it's fair to note when it comes to Josh Rosen, there were several opinions of him that were not flattering. Whether you and I agree with them, whether fans agree with them, NFL teams thought this, and their opinions in terms of value of a player is essentially what matters. And the reality was always that there was a lower opinion of Rosen by many within the community in the NFL than what maybe Cardinals fans and media and then NFL media thought of him. And so I think there was a disconnect there in terms of what his true value was. Many people went in with this idea that why would you not trade your first round pick for Josh Rosen instead of taking Daniel Jones?
Doesn't make a lick of sense to me.
And that's the truth. I mean, you and I look at it and go, well, we'd rather have Rosen than Daniel Jones. But remember, the Giants had the second pick last year. Not only did they say no to Josh Rosen, but they said no to Sam Darnold. They said no to Josh Allen.
They didn't say no to Baker Mayfield. But they would have. They would have said no to Baker Mayfield, too.
Right. And so that's the thing. Is like, we can think whatever we want. We can, in fact, be right. And I would wager we would be right that Josh Rosen is a better quarterback or will be a better quarterback in his career than Daniel Jones. However, the NFL didn't agree. The NFL, two teams that drafted quarterbacks this year and last year said, no thanks, I'm good with Josh Rosen. That was the Giants and that was the Broncos. Both of them were like, no, that's not a guy that interests us. The Giants were interested, but they wanted to give up like a third or a fourth round pick. So their interest was this. And this is the same team that spent a third round pick on Davis Webb. So like that was, and again, I'm not saying this is right. I'm saying this is what their opinion is of a player. The Broncos, I can tell you, would not have drafted Josh Rosen. Now, again, this is not an indictment of Josh Rosen. We're talking about a guy in John Elway who said, hey, Paxton Lynch, that's my guy. Like, that's the guy I want that's going to take this team to, you know, the
post. And then Trevor Siemian.
Yeah. And then Case Keenum and now Joe Flacco or Drew Locke. So that's the thing. Is like, the indictments of Rosen should not be looked at as negative. Because the people making the decisions, I wouldn't say, are always the best. However, those are still the opinions of the decision makers. And in the end, while you and I disagree, that's what the NFL, for whatever reason, thought of Josh Rosen. The Dolphins thought highly enough of him to trade a second round pick, but they wanted to make sure it wasn't 48. They wanted to make sure it was a little lower than that. So when it's all said and done, and honestly, I can tell Cardinals fans this, I really don't think there would have been a difference on who the Cardinals pick, and we'll cover that in a second. I don't think there would have been a difference who the Cardinals would have picked at 48 or 62. I truly don't.
Now, in terms of as a fan, I'll tell you this. What they say about Josh Rosen is really interesting, whatever it is. Now, I love how he's handled everything. And for some reason, I think this reputation he got came from probably his freshman year. He was a hotshot kid coming to high school, top recruit in the nation. He didn't know how to talk publicly, and he said things off the cuff, and I believe this. There is nothing about Josh Rosen that's not confident. He believes in himself. Now, he said the right things, but I will tell you this. In terms of being a bad teammate, that's completely false. Being uncoachable, he wants to challenge his coaches, not because he's a prick, but because he wants to be better at football. In terms of the personality of Josh Rosen, and this is something that I've been coming to the team as media now. This is, I think, my fifth or sixth year, and I've been inside the media room. I've been in the locker room and things like that. Here's something that I've never had happen. It had happened with Josh Rosen. He was introduced to the media, the big press conference after he was drafted. After that, that's normal. He, on his own, took it upon himself after the presser about a half hour later. He came into the media workroom to introduce himself individually to each reporter there. It was really cool, and it was shocking considering the stuff that they said about him. I love the fact that he's told his agent if they were going to keep both guys on the Cardinals, and he's a competitor. he's a competitor. I'll just beat him out. And Kyler can be the backup. And I'm excited for what is in store for him. But we can turn the page now. And let's talk about Kyler Murray then. Because, one, what are your expectations? Two, have the Cardinals put him in, or is he going to be as good as they say? Because the way Steve Keim is talking and the way Cliff Kingsbury are talking, we're talking about a future Hall of Fame quarterback, because they say they've never, well, one, he spins the, like, he throws the ball, like, in terms of throwing, as good as they've ever seen any of the great ones. And then you get the running ability, and if they've never seen a player like that ever, is there any way that he can actually meet the expectations that are upon him?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's going to be very difficult. But the thing with Kyler as a player has always been he is an incredible athlete. And so he's, when you look at his play and his demeanor, he's not Baker Mayfield. And I think a lot of people expected or wanted that out of him, but that's not who he is personality wise. Who he is personality wise is a player that just goes out there and produces at an insane level. And I hate using hyperbole, but it really isn't. When you look at it, he produces at a level that nobody else ever has.
It's insane. It's not just his production. It's what he does with this team. This is a kid who did not lose in high school. This is Texas high school where the programs are good. He didn't lose in high school.
And that was from sophomore year on. That wasn't like just his senior year. Like, yeah.
3 years, 3 straight state championships. Now, he doesn't get to start till last year in Oklahoma. And what the heck does he go and do? He takes an Oklahoma team and takes them to the college football semifinals.
Yeah, and so the thing is with Kyler that is unique, that is different, is that he is, and this is not an overstatement, again, like a lot of the stuff that gets said about Kyler really sounds like hyperbole, because usually when you gush about guys, it's, you know, oh, he, like you said, he spins it better than anybody, or he does this better, but it's true when you say something like this. Every time Kyler steps on the field, he is the most athletic person on the field. It's an insane way he plays and how he is built and the way he's been successful in his life playing football. From the fact that he is able to average over 9 yards per carry, but he doesn't run that much. Like, he's not a guy that looks to take off running. He likes to throw the football, and he does it incredibly well and incredibly efficiently and consistently. And so that makes, you know, that's what's hard to grasp about him, is you want to put a comparison on him. You know, you see Russell Wilson, I've seen a lot of people say he's Mike Vick. So here's the thing. He's a better passer already than Mike Vick was. And I'm not trying to, you know, oversell this. Like, when you just compare.
Mike Vick was a terrible passer to stand out. I will take in by the end of his career in 2010, he had a special season.
Right. Okay. And so, but that's, we're comparing 1999 or 2000 Mike Vick in terms of passing versus 2019 Kyler Murray. So we're not talking about 10 years in, we're talking about a guy, you know, coming out of Virginia Tech versus Kyler coming out of Oklahoma. And then you want to compare him to Russell Wilson. Well, again, Kyler Murray is a better runner than Russell Wilson was coming out of NC State or Wisconsin. You know, Kyler Murray ran more efficiently, at a greater pace, at a more effective, efficient pace than what Russell Wilson did. So those are the two comps you see a lot of. I think he doesn't have the arm strength that Vic had, but rarely people do. I mean, Michael Vick had one of the
Kyler Murray has got a plenty strong arm.
Russell Wilson's
got a great arm. He's got a really good arm. Kyler Murray's arm is on par with Russell Wilson.
Right. I mean, Murray, people are always worried about, you know, oh, he's 5'10", you know, is he going to be able to see over the line? It's like you realize he's been 5'10" his entire life, right? Like he's had this, and it's not a deficiency.
5'5" sophomore in high school.
Right. So he's had this, you know, barrier to overcome every season he's played since he was a sophomore. And he's done it at, again, an insanely effective and insanely productive level. And then the final thing is this, and this is, I think, the hardest thing for a lot of people to grasp, is that what Cliff Kingsbury's offense can be, not what Cliff Kingsbury's offense has been, but what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do with his offense. You'd have to go back to Johnny Manziel's season as the Heisman Trophy winner at Texas A&M, when Cliff was the offensive coordinator there. So he wasn't the head coach. He wasn't the one making, you know, the calls and things of that nature, but he was the offensive coordinator. And you see that he is a guy that has put together an offense, that Texas A&M offense, that is most like what we would see from Kyler's skill set in terms of running. But he does do, and he's not, I don't want this to be overstated, I don't think he's on par with Patrick Mahomes as a thrower. I don't think he can do that. But they'll use the same offensive play calls and similar offensive design to what Mahomes did while at Texas Tech. So that's the biggest thing, I think, for Kyler, is that he's a guy that if he lives up to his potential, if he's able to reach the ceiling, that you're talking about a guy that can, you know, throw the ball like Russell Wilson, but run the ball like Michael Vick. And again, that is incredibly high praise. So I don't want people saying, well, this is what you said. No. If everything goes right, if he reaches his ceiling, that's who he is as a ceiling. He'll be a player unlike any we've ever seen in the NFL before.
And he'll be unstoppable. There won't be a thing that any defense can do.
Right.
At all.
But that has to, I mean, that is the best case scenario. And that is what makes all of this so hard and so difficult, is that who knows if they'll ever reach that scenario? Whoever knows if he'll reach that ceiling.
Now, here's the thing getting back to this, a lot of people, and I've come to grips with this. When you drafted a guy you feel is your franchise quarterback a year ago, why would you do it again? And this is why. They understood having the first overall pick is something that you ideally never happens again. And so the process they took of evaluating everyone, even the quarterback, they had to do. And as much as if they felt that Josh Rosen was a franchise quarterback, they have to ignore that because they don't have this opportunity again. So if they can get a guy that's even more special, and I think it became very clear, they see traits in Kyler that they don't see in any other quarterback. And like Steve Keim said, when he closes his eyes, he sees fireworks. And I no longer blame them for what they're doing. In fact, if they're going by their belief system, this was the play that they need to make, because how often do you have a quarterback then end up with a quarterback that's pretty good and then you don't do anything? Look at the Lions. Like, look what's happened with Jay Cutler. Look what happens with Matthew Stafford all of those years.
Look,
Carson Palmer for most of his career, honestly.
Well, and God forbid, what happens if it's Blake Bortles?
Right, or Blaine Gabbert, or this. And but now you have a guy, you see a guy in the draft, and you say, no, this guy's special. Okay, we're gonna cut bait. And here's the thing for me now. Even though the Josh Rosen trade was a bad trade, it doesn't matter if Kyler Murray is what they think it is. If Kyler Murray is who the Cardinals believe he is, it wouldn't matter if they cut Josh Rosen. It wouldn't have mattered anything. In fact, nothing matters in this draft class really at all if Kyler Murray is who they say, if they believe he is. Because if he is, this team will reach special heights.
Yeah, and that's the main thing that people have to understand from all of this is that the most important player in this draft, whether it's, you know, who they drafted or who they didn't draft, is Kyler Murray. Like, literally, nothing else matters if they get Kyler Murray wrong. So,
because if he's wrong, Kingsbury's right. Fired, Kimes fired,
We're starting over. And the hope is that's if it's to happen, it's not a year or 2 years, because that means that they're historically awful again, right? More than anything, that's what you're really hoping against, is that they're not a historically awful team again. And so, you know, you look at this is a gamble. This is truly a swing for the fences moment by Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals. However, I think it was one that was done in a way that showed that they have a belief and they see what they're looking for with Cliff Kingsbury, and they have an identity. And I think their draft really showed that.
Got up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're going to talk a little bit more. This is more than just Kyler Murray. We're going to talk about their three picks on day two of the draft. We're going to talk Byron Murphy and Isabella, Zach Allen. That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the day two picks. That we could probably have three shows all about Kyler Murray, but the Cardinals did more than that. And day two of the draft became interesting for two reasons. One, because they had the first pick overall. Then the Josh Rosen trade happens, which then nets them another pick, and they pick the player that they get is Andy Isabella. And then, you know, I'll be honest, Zach Allen was kind of out of left field for me, but I like the pick. And all three of these picks look really good. There was disappointing at the end of the first round because N'Keal Harry, Arizona State standout receiver, was taken by the New England Patriots. But when Byron Murphy was left on the board, a guy that Cliff Kingsbury hinted that there were players in their top 15 available at the top of the second round, and then that was revealed that he was top 10 on their board. I'd seen mock drafts where he had gone top 15 in the first round, but he's available, local kid, Washington defensive backs tend to do, the Cardinals like him. They land this kid, and it's hard not to love this pick, in my opinion, because while he does not have that elite athleticism in terms of straight line speed like you want to see in your corners, he does a lot of things well. He makes plays on balls. And guess what? Now they have three good corners, it appears, right? Patrick, Robert Alford, who they really are high on, and now Byron Murphy. This is now a great situation.
Well, and the other thing is this. It goes into the idea that if Robert Alford flops, all right, you have Byron Murphy. If Robert Alford is good, okay, one of Byron Murphy's strengths is his ability to play in the slot. In fact, I would say that's his strongest asset and positional need, so to speak, is that he is a really effective slot cornerback and a guy that can be just as good against the pass or against the run as he will be against the pass for the Arizona Cardinals. And so, like you said, if Robert Alford is what the Cardinals think he's going to be, then when it all is said and done, they'll have three talented cornerbacks on the field. And in Vance Joseph's defense, the nickel corner is one of the most important assets on the entire team. Chris Harris may have been the best corner or nickel slot corner in the NFL, you know, and so Joseph is used to having that guy. Hopefully Byron Murphy is that guy. You know, and this is where, you know, maybe after the Allen pick, we'll discuss the board a little bit.
And so Byron Murphy, great pick, taken at the top of the second. Now, it wasn't a surprise. By the time the draft happened, everyone knew that he was going to be the pick. Yeah, that was reported on several outlets. Now, Josh Rosen pick happened, the Josh Rosen trade happens, and then Andy Isabella. Now, he's a guy that we've talked about on this show in terms of the athleticism, the quickness, the production, and his connection to the coaching staff. I think it was a surprise that I expected him to be their pick at the top of the third. Who knows if he'd have been there, but instead you get someone who, and when we were looking at the combine, not only did he blow everyone away in the 40 at 4.31, he also has all the other quickness measurables. He has incredible production. He also, crazy enough, he looks like a home run pick. And if anything else, he's perfect for this offense because as quick as he is, he used to be a running back, and he's built kind of like a short running back. He's very thick. He's very thick and muscular, but on top of that, he's got great speed. So like these first three picks the Cardinals make, they feel like home run picks.
Yeah, and you kind of look at it, and he and Kyler are kind of built and athletically the same in terms of that thick lower body running style, running, being able to run like a running back and run through tackles at their size, and then of course the incredible elite kind of speed. The thing is with Isabella is he's a guy that can play outside. So despite being 5'9", 5'10", you know, he's a guy that is able to play outside, is able to play, you know, as a guy lining up outside as the outside wide receiver. Now with Cliff's offense, he'll be able to use interchangeably guys like Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella, you know, similar style players with the ball in their hands, be able to, you know, line up on either side and make plays. And what it is it's a guy that fits into what the Cardinals want to do offensively. I know a lot of fans were annoyed, and maybe that's not the right word, but hoping for DK Metcalf, who then ended up in Seattle. And so that kind of sticks in their craw a little bit. But the reality is, from a wide receiver readiness standpoint, Andy Isabella is a much more refined product than DK Metcalf is at this point. Not to say that Metcalf won't be better over the course of their careers, but when you look at everything, I think that Andy Isabella is maybe one of the safer picks in this draft as a guy with a very high floor, because he is an elite traits type of guy in terms of size, or in terms of speed, quickness, agility, and then catch and run ability.
Their third pick, Zach Allen, defensive lineman out of Boston College. He's a guy I didn't really know much about, but when I read about him, when I hear about him, oh my gosh, I like him. And what it looks like with their first four picks, all four of these picks are going to get significant playing time. Kyler obviously going to be starting cornerback, quarterback. Byron Murphy's going to get what, if he's not the starter, he's going to be the third corner, so he'll play significantly. And Isabella, he matches up right now as wide receiver three, who will get significant playing time. Zach Allen on that defensive line looks, now they've got their starter set. You've got Corey Peters, you've got Darius Falon, and you've got Rodney Gunter. Throw Zach Allen right into that rotation. He's relentless. He's a dog. He's incredibly productive. I mean, 100 tackles from a defensive line position is unheard of, and that's what he did in 2017. He moves well. He has super high motor. You like his character. You like the fact that he plays with his hair on fire. And the comment that he made is like, if you loaf, you're a loafer and you're a traitor to your team. So he doesn't take plays off, which defensive linemen take plays off all the time.
Yeah, and he's a guy that is going to endear himself to fans a lot. Like, he's kind of a souped-up Josh Morrow. So, you know, is he going to be a 8-10 sack a year guy? Absolutely not. No, it's not going to happen. But is he a guy that can get maybe 5 or 6 sacks a season? Yes. Is he a guy that can play every down or play 80% of snaps, which you and I have talked about this quite a bit. That's not common for 34 defensive linemen to see them play a high percentage of snaps. And so
you got Calais Campbell, and that's about it.
Right. And when you look at that, that is potentially what Zach Allen can be as a player. He's a guy that has that motor. He has that strength. He has that ability to stay on the field in any situation. And if the Cardinals continue to have success, it's going to be because a guy like Zach Allen turns into is it Garrett Wolf? I think that's the name. Derek Wolf. Thank you. Derek Wolf out of that was in Denver, that played under Vance Joseph, that played really well. So that's the type of player they're looking for, and that's kind of what Zach Allen is modeled after in terms of size, strength, speed type of player. He's a guy that fits that mold, and he's a guy I think is going to be an incredibly successful fit in this defense that they want to run.
So what it comes down to this, the Cardinals say that after Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury come out and talk to the media after day two of the draft. So in their first 65 picks, in the first 65 picks of the draft, they ended up with four players that they ranked in their top 35. Is that what they said?
Yes.
So that, I mean, take it for you. So either the league is missing something, the draft just fell differently, or the Cardinals are grading players oddly. But personally, it looks like you've got one every down starter. You've got a basic starter because your slot corner is basically a starter, and then two significant snaps. So in your first four picks, 65 picks in the entire draft, you've got four players that should be significant contributors in year one. That's fantastic. I mean, really, if we look at it big picture, this is a fantastic way for things to fall thus far.
It is. And when you look at it and you talk about board and things of that nature, you know, this is, I joked about it, and then it just became a little more obvious that, so they installed an analytics department, right? This year, like a full-fledged analytics department. They had analytics, but it was more of a complete analytics department. And one of the things that I kind of joked about was like, hey, are they using, Pro Football Focus's big board? Because you look at it, and they wrote about this, Pro Football Focus did even, that no team has ever picked five players in the Pro Football Focus big board top 50. And we'll get to the fifth one, but the Cardinals' first four picks were all in the top 39, I believe, of the Pro Football Focus Big Board. They picked their number one overall player in Kyler Murray. They picked their number six overall player in Byron Murphy. They picked the number 30 overall player in Andy Isabella at 62. And then they picked, I want to say Zach Allen. He was either 39 or 40 on the dot. So, I mean, literally, the Cardinals' first four picks were all top 40 talents, according to Pro Football Focus, in this 2019 NFL draft. And so it jives with the idea that they leaned a little heavier on analytics and production in college as opposed to just straight testing and or production in college.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we're going to come back and talk about the day three picks. They had seven of them on day three. We'll react to those picks, who they are. Do we like them? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and we're going to start with day three of the draft. Obviously, the one that gets the most attention is the one that is the player they took at the top of the fourth round, being Iowa State's Hakeem Butler, who would be that fifth player that they got that managed to be in their top 50. And then it was, you know, Pro Football Focus. Hakeem Butler, I like the pick. The fact that someone with his physical traits and production fell that far worries me a little bit. And I will say this. I don't think he will play as much as all the fans think he will, because he's going to probably be wide receiver four on this team. And as much as they say that they're going to run four wide sets, I think they're going to run four wide sets with
Charles Clay
and David Johnson, maybe Ricky Seals-Jones. So there will be some snaps. There will be some plays for the fourth wide receiver. But think of the J.J. Nelson role. In his rookie year, he will have the chance to make plays, but I don't think he'll be a significant contributor this year. And it's not like I don't like the Butler pick, because we talked about him before leading up to the draft. He's a physical freak. I mean, with his length and speed, I mean, you have to like that. But when you see the entire league passing him up for the first three entire rounds, you wonder, are there just that many good receivers, or is it a case where there aren't great all around receivers? And so it's just kind of the flavor of your team.
Well, I think what the Cardinals were able to do was address two needs. They addressed the need of getting a future kind of match to Christian Kirk. Albeit, you know, that's a smaller receiving corps, but that's very much like when the Browns were rolling out Emmanuel Sanders and Antonio Brown. And no, I'm not saying Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella are going to be those two players. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that they're similar in size, speed, stature, strengths type stuff. So that's what you look at there. So when you look at that, I think you understand why then a guy like Hakeem Butler would fit in, because who was that third guy for the Steelers that they always tried to fit or find? And it was, you know, it was a Martavis Bryant or a who was the other one? They brought in Linus Swede. I don't know if people remember him, you know, but it was guys that were big-bodied receivers that could become sort of 50-50 guys, kind of a bailout big play guy, a box-out guy for their quarterback. And I think that was the role that they're looking at in terms of Hakeem Butler, and I think that's honestly okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so when you get that value in the fourth round, I think you're okay with it. I think you're happy with that result. And the guys I talked to, they were never as big or high on Butler as the rest of kind of what seemed like the draft community. However, where they got him, they all said that's a very good value pick, because like Jess said, he's probably going to be a 35 to 40% snap guy who's able to really excel and flourish in a single role. And quite frankly, you're okay with that. You're okay with him being the big play down the field, 50-50 kind of guy. You know, I don't want to compare him to this, but when you look at what Michael Floyd did best, it was always kind of that 50-50 straight line jump ball guy. And that's who I think Hakeem Butler can become. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to go for 1,000 yards, but if he gets to the point where he is a true wide receiver three that can, you know, maybe win in four or five different ways as opposed to two or three, then you could be you could see a guy that becomes a 750-yard plus guy, but maybe a guy that goes for like 8 to 10 touchdowns a year, which would be obviously bigger than the number of receiving yards he has.
The rest of the players that they picked, that there's a lot of them. Here's the rundown. Alabama safety Deontay Thompson, a guy that had the wrist injury, so he didn't do the combine things. The report came out of a degenerative knee. The Cardinals say that they have zero concern about that. In terms of skill, if I look back and I asked Keim about how he compares to a guy like Rashad Johnson, because he gives them a true, you know, like a true post safety, a guy who plays center field. Rashad Johnson was good at that, only Thompson moves better. He's a little longer and he's a little faster. So that's, but I don't expect him to play this year. You add, they've got 2 sixth-round picks and they've got 3 seventh-round picks. Keyshawn Johnson is a receiver that a lot of people like. There is a lot to like about him. He does a lot of things well. Then kind of the rest of the guys, my favorite pick on day three is Temple's Michael Dogby. I think he will be very good on that defensive line. I don't know how much he'll produce, but I think he will be a key guy on that defensive line, a guy who will get significant, who will get snaps in playing time and will be a, like his last name, Dogby. He'll be a dog on defense. I think he's my favorite pick of the day three guys.
So my favorite pick's Thompson, just because I thought he was a top 30 player in this draft. I knew there was injury concerns. I didn't know they were that serious. So like Butler and Thompson are what I consider just complete value picks, because they're guys that looked like having starter upside and their floors being guys that can contribute. And so getting that in round 4 and 5 is insane. When you look at Thompson, like you said, he's kind of like a Rashad Johnson. He's kind of like Rashad Johnson with DJ Swearinger's attitude, but unfortunately in like Brandon Williams' wispy body. That's kind of how I would describe him. Like, he's an athletic guy. He is kind of that back-end savant, like where he understands angles and trajectory and all the kind of minutia of playing that center field single high role of a safety better than most. But the problem is they say he's – what they list him at, 191 or something like that, 192 – at 6'1", he's probably like in the 180s, and he thinks he's 230 pounds. Like, this is a guy that comes up and just will throw his entire body into you. So maybe he doesn't have a degenerative knee, but this is a – like, I described him as a kamikaze. Like, that's really what he is. When he reads it and reacts, especially on rundowns, and he comes downhill against the running back – he doesn't care if you're David Johnson at 230 pounds. He doesn't care if you're Todd Gurley. He doesn't care if you're, you know, if you're just TJ Logan, you know, a more scat back undersized guy, he's going to try to murder you every time he hits you. And so that's the like one negative with him. You know, my favorite guy that we haven't talked about is Lamont Gaillard, who I don't know if he even makes this roster, but I can tell you this, there's not one person I'd rather have in a fight than Gaillard. You watch him play on film, and I can tell you this much, if he wasn't on the Arizona Cardinals, we'd be throwing that D word around, dirty. Like, he is a guy that plays till the, you know, they call it the plays to the echo of the whistle. You know, he doesn't stop until he, you know, the whistle sound is gone and has, you know, has ended. And that truly, that's how he plays. It's borderline dirty. It is nasty, but he's out there to set a tone and to introduce himself to you early and often. You go watch him against Quinnen Williams. He had a nice game. You know, he's a guy that the reason he fell is they list him at 6'3 and 303, and I think he's about 6'2 and 295. But he's a guy that's improved every year, and you know, he switched over from defensive tackle to center. That's incredible. And then like you said, Dogby, like, there are a handful of people in the world that can bench 500 pounds. There are a handful of people in the world that squat over 600 pounds. And then the number of people that intersect there is probably even less. And Dogby is one of them. Like, he is a weight room fiend. He's a guy that wants to, you know, that wants to get better, that wants to work at it, unrelenting. And that was something that we saw them address on the defensive line with Zach Allen and with Michael Dogby. And then the last two guys they drafted,
Joshua Miles.
Joshua Miles, thank you. I can never remember if it's Miles or Joshua first. But yeah, Joshua Miles, he had a lot of buzz at the Shrine game. Jess and I are not going to pretend to know a ton about him because, quite frankly, we don't
get... He's an athletic big tackle.
Right, we don't get Morgan State film. Like, I can probably find it if I reach out to enough people, but I'm not really going to. I'm not going to lie.
He filled the small school quota because
exactly. They got to get the UMass guy and now the Morgan State guy. So they went, you know, small school, and then they went real like deep dive. But no, seriously, he got a bunch of attention at the Shrine game because of how athletic he is. So he's a guy that
he's kind of like Corey Cunningham, isn't it? He's not quite as athletic as Corey Cunningham.
No, but he's more, he's bigger. And he's long, like 36 inch arms long. Like, he's a long dude. It's kind of crazy. So, you know, that's a big one. And then the other one is Caleb Wilson, who, you know, it makes sense from an athletic standpoint in the spread. The question becomes, like, he's going to be fighting with Ricky. He's going to give Ricky Seals-Jones kind of a run for his money because they're similar type players. Wilson's a better straight line athlete, but I think Ricky Seals-Jones is a better overall athlete. Wilson, you go in the you're Mr. Irrelevant because you're not a complete player. And I wrote about this the other day. The reason you go on day three is because you're lacking either in several areas or, you know, in Keyshawn Johnson's point, you know, you're lacking in a very crucial area, like you're a 4.65 wide receiver, and that's really hard to justify going early. So when you look at the seven, you know, those guys in rounds 4 through 6, you're drafting traits. You know, Butler and Thompson were about value, but Gaillard is kind of a nasty enforcer type. You know, Dogby, like Jess talked about, one of the strongest, baddest dudes every time he's on the field. Then you had Miles, who is that kind of athletic athletic guy with upside potential. He looks I mean, just from the draft perspective, he looks like he's a practice squad guy, right? Like, yeah, you're like, oh, this guy's going on the practice squad. Caleb Wilson is a guy that just got, I mean, he's a 4.5 tight end at 250 pounds, but he doesn't really do anything else other than run really, really well with either the ball in his hands or trying to get separation. So that, you know, that's why on these guys get drafted on day three, it's because they're missing something. So when you look at it, you've got a bunch of guys with really, really solid traits. We'll see how those translate, because 11 draft picks, that's a lot of roster spots. And we're not going to talk about it tonight, I don't think, right? But that makes a huge difference in how many undrafted rookies they bring in.
Right.
Because all of a sudden now the Cardinals only signed 12 undrafted free agents.
I think they brought in as many as 20 or 23 one year.
Yeah, but I think that's the lowest number I can remember.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, ultimately they end up bringing in 22 to 26 rookies every year.
Right.
And 22 to 20 between 20 between 20 and 30, and between the draft picks and the undrafted, that's 23. So that,
yeah, exactly. So that's how it kind of works out. So I liked the draft quite a bit. I got the hesitation from those that were a little unhappy with the Rosen return, but you have to remember that this is the NFL, and they've got their evaluations too of what they have on a guy. And quite frankly, while we in the Arizona media, if you want to call me media, I don't, but you know, we in the Arizona media can say, really, you want Daniel Jones at the sixth pick? Like, you could have had Josh Rosen for the 17th pick. Like, you really want, you know, Drew Lock for the 41st or 42nd pick, whatever it was, you could have had Josh Rosen for that. Like, we may say these things, but in the end, good or bad, these guys get paid to make those decisions. And I can promise you there wasn't a team that was going to that was going to make a trade for Rosen for a first round pick. And it has nothing to do with, oh, the Cardinals didn't have any leverage or this or that or the other. It's just that the teams that needed quarterbacks weren't going to trade a first for him because they didn't value him as a first-round player. And they didn't value him as a first-round player because they didn't value him as a first-round player last year. And that's what makes it really difficult, is that when you already have a grade on a guy, you're not going to change that grade in an off season, especially, or in a season, especially when a guy, I mean, look, and it wasn't his fault, but when a guy just didn't perform at a high level.
Right. Right. Coming next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we'll wrap up the show talking about grades, reaches, steals, and regrets. That's coming next on the Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So grades, reaches, steals, and regrets. We both know that the idea of grading a draft is dumb, but people click, people read, so they want our analysis. So obviously what we're seeing is, you know, the Cardinals did really well in the draft. So it's hard for me to say anything other than an A, because they got a franchise quarterback, or should be a franchise quarterback. They got picks of value, like highly rated players outside of those high picks. And they kind of hit on every single area. It's hard to give them anything less than really an A. And the only reason people would someone might grade them down is because they didn't get quote unquote value for Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I've seen that be like the overarching reason to downgrade their draft grade. I don't think I've seen anything lower than a B, and most people have them as a B plus or an A. And the knock is, well, they hurt themselves with Josh Rosen. It's like, well, I mean, did they really?
I mean, They had an expendable player. Like, right. So they have a very expendable player that they could not keep on the roster because that would have been you don't want two young franchise quarterbacks creating a controversy. That just wouldn't be a good look.
Well, and when you look at it, Alex Smith got traded for what? Did he get two? Did they give up two twos? Or they gave up a two and like Kyle Fuller or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was two and a cornerback. Because he got traded for a Hall the first time, too.
Right, but that was coming off like a career season. You look at Antonio Brown, who is an all-pro wide receiver. The Steelers got a third and a fifth for him. So, I mean, I get the investment portion of it. I get that they gave up a one, a three, and a five. I get that. So they got a two and a five back. So basically they lost a one in the entire transaction. They lost a one overall. That's a really hard pill to swallow. I get that, but I mean, let's base it off of what they did and not what they had to do following something else. So I think that was the biggest, I get not wanting to give them an A because of that, but I think it's foolhardy.
For me, if we talk on the biggest steal, I would have to agree. Butler's probably a steal. Thompson's a steal. I think their biggest steal though is Murphy. At the top of the second, a first round talent, going to play significantly this year, and they got him in the top of the second round.
Yeah, I was shocked he was available. Not that I had a problem with DeAndre Baker being the first and only.
It was just weird that such a premium position
didn't get picked at all.
Right.
Well, and you could say the same about wide receiver. I mean, I may disagree with using first round picks on wide receivers, but I mean, it ended up being Marquise Brown and N'Keal Harry. I mean, those were literally the only two wide receivers drafted, right? In the first round. DeAndre Baker was the only cornerback, I believe, drafted, correct?
Yeah.
In the first round. And then there's a couple safeties, but I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, it just is, it's interesting to me that there was such a run on offensive line that it in turn pushed down other talented positions like wide receiver and corner. So that's, you know, that was my whole thing. I saw a lot of people complaining about missed opportunities on the offensive line, but when you're truly going off your board, when you're truly working off a board, it doesn't matter where, you know, what position you need more. If Byron Murphy is truly a top 10 player in this draft,
you cannot
pass him up to take a guy that might be 25. I mean, if he, let's just say he was the sixth overall player, like PFF had him, right? And then you look at Dalton Risner or Cody Ford or Jawan Taylor, any of those guys. Those guys are all in their, in the, say, let's say 15 to 25 range. You're going to give up 10, a 10 value type spots in order to just fill a need.
Like, and I'll make this point. And it's a need that wouldn't even crack the starting lineup this year.
Right. Right, exactly. That's my next point. That literally is probably not going to play. So, barring an injury, and we can make as many jokes as we want. Oh, I'm sure that'll happen. But that's still the reality of the situation. Is that you've got a guy in Murphy who is now going to play 60 to 70 to 80% of the snaps, as opposed to you have an offensive lineman that you drafted.
Right. Like,
that's my struggle with people that regret. If anything, the bigger regret is, and it's not, I don't want to say it to sound negative. I really don't. But the idea of not getting your guy again, and I think that would be N'Keal Harry. Now, I'm not saying that they should have traded back into the first round to get N'Keal Harry. I don't think that.
And here's the thing. I don't think if both Murphy and Harry are on the board, they take Harry anyway.
Right. And so that's, you know, but if you're looking at these things and you're looking at the entirety of the board, I think the biggest regret comes in that you were put in a position where you drafted Andy Isabella. And again, I have no problem with any of the picks. You drafted Andy Isabella at 62, expecting not to be able to get Hakeem Butler with the first pick of the fourth round. And I'm not saying hindsight, they would have not drafted Andy, because I think Andy is a completely different receiver with different skills and things of that nature. But I think it changed. I think the Butler pick showed that they were truly looking at value over everything else to start the fourth round, because he was the best player on almost every board. And so what ends up happening is you took a guy in Butler because of value at that point, whereas you probably could have gotten a need better maybe with that 62nd pick if you knew Butler's on the board at that first pick in the fourth round. Now, again, I'm not saying that they made a mistake, but, and it's obviously hindsight, but I think if they knew that Butler would have been there, I don't know if they would have taken Isabella there.
Well, that's very true. And the other thing for that is, the other thing that we run across is the fact that at 62, I think Isabella, if I had to pick one of the players that they selected as a reach, Isabella might be that player. And I had Isabella pegged to be taken at the top of the third round.
Right. So you're talking three picks. Right.
But then they wouldn't have gotten Zach Allen. So I think they could have gotten Andy Isabella at the top of the end. And had they ended up with the 48th pick, I would have been, well, should they have picked Isabella there? They might have been able to get Isabella later, but then who they get instead? I mean, do they take a DK Metcalf? Obviously, they had Isabella above Metcalf. There are only two players that separated the Isabella pick and the Butler pick, even though they were a day apart.
Right. And so that's, you know, that's the hard look at this whole thing, is that you just sometimes you don't know how that third round's going to fall. And so you pick Isabella in the second round, and then you go to the third round, and you're looking at all these teams that need wide receivers, and you're looking at guys like, you know, Butler and Miles Boykin and these guys that are falling, and you're going, ugh. And again, I don't think they would regret it. I don't think that they'd even care. But I think when you build your board, you expect to see guys fall, and I don't think they expected the guys that fell to fall, especially when you look at Butler and Deontay Thompson in the fourth and fifth round.
Right. And then that, for me, the one regret, because I don't regret the Cardinals not addressing the offensive line earlier. It's just it didn't work with who they had. Really, Eric McCoy was the pick I would hope I hoped they would have taken at 48 if they had gotten that pick, and I hoped he would have been there at 62, but he wasn't. So I regret in the fact that, because it could have been McCoy, Isabella, but then again, that's playing at the center, and they still drafted a center, which is the one position that they seem to be okay at, because they got two of them. So my regret is, they should have been able to. They should have gotten more for Rosen, even though there really was no way to get more for Rosen that they got.
No, and again, when you talk about how the draft fell, what is one of the things that we talked about was, you know, where does Dwayne Haskins go? Where does Daniel Jones go? And so when Haskins fell out of the top 10. You're sitting there going, okay, so this team needs a quarterback And then they passed on him, and you're like, oh, okay, this team needs – oh, wait. They passed on him too. And so he got to Washington, and it's like, well, they're not going to pass on him because they were just talking about trading up for him. So, you know, it ends up being a game, and you try to predict what other teams are going to do, and a lot of times that's even harder to predict than what you're going to do yourself because you don't control – the other teams, you only control yourself. And as you know, as duh as that sounds, it is the reality of the NFL draft every single year that guys get picked and you go, oh crap, that means this guy's going to be available, or vice versa, where you go, oh man, we thought we were the team that was going to get that guy. I think the Cardinals did that with Byron Murphy. I think they did that with Hakeem Butler. And so when you look at it that way, they got value at a lot of places, and then they got guys in the right spots. And I think that's why you can't give this draft anything. But, hey, this was a really, really good draft for the Arizona Cardinals.
Hopefully that they pan out now. It looks good. Hopefully
on paper. Yep.
It looks great on paper. Last year's draft class looked good, and they produced. They contributed. But now they're down another first-round pick. So – that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We will take a small hiatus unless something comes up news-wise. We'll probably come back once we have some OTA news, maybe mini camp, and there's some stories to talk about. But until that time, that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. Visit both the sites, read the content we got there. It's great stuff about the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll be back again in a few weeks.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.